This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The title of poet Diane DeSillis' new collection of work is When the Heart Needs a Stunt Double. That got our attention right away. It's a pretty relevant idea for the year 2021. As National Poetry Month continues, we wanted to spend a little time with this West Bloomfield-based poet, also a well-known gallerist in the area. In the collection, she talks about the difficult terrain of loss, figurative and literal heartbreak, and about marking out a path for survival. Diane DeSillis joins us now. Diane, welcome back to Stateside.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
That title is such a striking image, the stunt double, stepping in for a heart in need. How did you encounter that idea?
You know, it came from the title poem in my book, and that poem was about the moment I found out the father that I adored was no longer going to be around. I came home and my mother told me they had gotten a divorce, and that experience affected me for the rest of my life. So I wrote about it, and that's what I thought would be a good idea if you could have a stunt double for your heart when you had moments that you needed a stronger stand-in for what's going on.
Will you read for us?
Certainly. When my mother said the word divorce in response to my asking where my father was, after she'd said he won't be back, I asked what the word meant because the closest association I could make to divorce was diving horse, an image to make sense of fairy tale magic plunging from its own dead weight. That day, having come home from school where my father usually asked what I'd learned, I learned I knew little. Me bedside, she propped by pillows reading a book, barely looking up when she said, "It means he's never coming back." I remember the whirl of confusion as if I'd heard a story read too fast to comprehend its meaning, trying to figure out how my father could make such an exit with no goodbye. The way a child might wonder how the horse climbs so high to take its spectacular dive.
Diane, how old were you when that happened?
Yeah, I was roughly 8 years old.
That's an effective capture of what happens in children's minds when they collide with a particularly difficult aspect of the adult world. How did you remember the diving horse metaphor?
You know, the diving horse, you go to Coney Island, which I've never actually seen them, but I've seen them on television, and you watch these horses climb up and just blindly jump off this high dive into a small pool. And so with my knowledge and looking back, I just paired those two to capture that sensation.
That wasn't actually something that occurred to you as a kid.
No, it was just to underscore how that must have felt for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
May I ask, did you see your father again?
I did when I was 15. So he had moved to Europe, and he was an independent management consultant. So he worked in Belgium, he worked in Venezuela, he worked all over the world, and his home was in Lebanon. And he took us on a trip to Europe and to Lebanon when I was 15, and that's when I saw him for the first time.
I wish there was a poem in this collection about that.
You know, I think there's one in my previous collection. There's a poem about watching him walk down the streets of the Champs-Élysées and how he looked to me. So I have written something about that. It's your expectations are not met when you idealize somebody. So it's a different experience.
It seems like this concept of a stunt double, you know, wishing for a stunt double for our own hearts, it seems like it's reaching for a way to dissociate from things that happen to us. Yes?
Yes, that's a part of it. When I wrote the book, I didn't know that I was going to have this rare open heart surgery, just to give you an example. So they had to go in and shave my heart because the muscle grew too big and I wasn't getting the proper blood flow. And it wasn't something you could just go to any heart surgeon for. I had to go to Cleveland. And what happened was...
To the clinic.
And when I got there, they didn't want to tell me all the things they were going to do ahead of time because it's extremely stressful. So finally, I'm going in the operating room and the surgeon tells me, we're going to saw your chest open. We're doing this, that, and the other thing. And I'm going, oh, holy cow. So then they roll me in to have the surgery. And suddenly these nurses come in and they're saying, stop, stop. She can't have the surgery. Because they had done some blood tests and found out I had a blood disorder, von Willebrand's, which would cause me to bleed out. So I had to go home for 30 days while they figured out this. And I was left with all these thoughts about what was going to happen. And the stunt double would have come in very handy for that because there was a lot of fear and anticipation. So, yeah, there are times in life when you hear some bad news and it's just hard to take and you wish somebody could stand in for you.
You've brought another poem I wanted to ask you about. It's called The Art of Kintsugi. Do you want to say something to set this up before you read it?
Yes, sure. Well, kintsugi is the Japanese art of repairing broken pottery, and they dust lacquer with gold to highlight it, and they want to highlight the fractures rather than hide them, and they also call it the art of precious scars. So this broken vessel is even more beautiful than it was before it, broke. So that seemed an interesting metaphor for having the heart surgery. When I went home for the 30 days, I thought to myself, well, I don't want him to just think of me as some slab on a table, so I think I'll write him a poem. And I wrote this for him, and I gave it to him, and he liked it. So this is called The Art of Kintsugi. To make the repair, the surgeon must fracture the sternum east, west. He must think in halves to spread the ribs right, left, and then consider what is right, what is left. He must palpate the jagged edges of loneliness. Once I dated a guy. It was snowing. There was a concert. We were to go together. Words drove us apart. When he ran to his car, sped off, I ran after him, my hands clamped to the bumper, feet sliding in the snow, the zigzag of tracks, my EKG before letting go. In order for the surgeon to find the wound, he must feel the muscle that builds the walls that have grown too thick. Observe how hard the muscle has worked, lifting and lowering the weight of love and sorrow. To make the repair, the surgeon must admire the beauty of wholeness, cobble and collage, in order to form the gilded scar that marries the sides, smooths the edges.
Wow. Were you in a place to be able to be sort of gathering images and impressions? Like, as you were starting to think about your body in this way as a thing that could be broken in a new way and also put back together?
Yes, that's where the kintsugi came in as a metaphor. That's where the pottery gets broken and then somebody puts it back together. And because they call it the art of precious scars, I thought that was just perfect, that it doesn't diminish you as a person. In fact, it could enhance you as a survivor. That was the kind of image I thought of. And I also thought, when I wrote the poem, I thought, how did that muscle get so thick that it has to be shaved? And then I thought sort of romantically about it, that my heart has worked with sorrow and abandonment and this and that. So you're lifting the weight of sorrow just as you lift a weight in a gym and your muscles get bigger. So I imagine my heart getting bigger from my experiences in life.
But then being needing a trim, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, needed a shave. So never heard of anything like that. But it's not something they do a lot of.
Can I ask, why poetry for you?
You know, when I was a young girl after my father left, and I'm not really talking about when I'm 8, but his desk was there and his bookcase was there. And he had these interesting books like The Ocean of Theosophy. But he had a Khalil Gibran's Prophet. Mm-hmm. And later, I just as a way to be close to him, I'd look through the book and I'd see these very soothing poems. And I imagined my father speaking through Gibran to me because it was his book. And the response I had to the poems led me to express myself that way. And that's really one of the things that started me writing poetry. Just getting a hold of that book and seeing, you know, they have little passages, if you've ever read the book, on joy and suffering. And one of the things Gibran says, you need to carve your heart out, essentially, to make room for joy. So the sorrow might carve your heart out, and then it can be filled with joy. Or I remember a quote that said, your children are not your children. They're the longing of life for itself. I don't have that correct right now, but those kinds of things were sort of philosophical and, like you're saying, allowed you to be removed from the actual emotion in a more intellectual way. And I think that's helpful. And I also think it's helpful in writing poetry. When you're writing about something that's very emotional to you, it's interesting to use humor or some sort of metaphor to distance yourself. Otherwise, you can't write it. So it worked that way.
What's the physical experience of writing poetry like for you?
It is sit in a chair, and this is a cliche about the zone, but you sit in this chair and you pick up these ideas and impulses, and it just isolates you in a very pleasant way. And it allows you to drift and think and attach yourself to ideas. And if I don't do it for several days, I'm not feeling so good. It just is a great way to get in touch with yourself, so to speak.
Yeah. There's one more poem I'd love to ask you to read for us. And it's a little different subject matter than what we've been tackling so far. There's a fair amount of really funny stuff in this book. There's one I wanted to ask you to read called The Fist on Jefferson Avenue Meets Isaac Newton.
Oh.
Do you mind?
Not at all. I'd be happy to. The Fist on Jefferson Avenue Meets Isaac Newton. Drive down Jefferson near the banks of the Detroit River. You can't miss the 24-foot-long, 8,000-pound sculpture, a forearm that cuts through the urban landscape, clean as the knockout Joe Louis delivered to Max Schmeling. Dubbed the Fist, this monument to Louis might have taught Newton a thing or two. Imagine pulling back the sleek bronze arm to launch an unstoppable forward motion, a hook, a cross, uppercut combos coming at you again and again. His fist, fastest in history, traveled mere inches, ending in paralyzing explosions. His moves efficient, accurate. I've seen Joe's hands, felt the warmth of his grip when I stood up with him at a friend's Vegas wedding. Dressed in elegant white, he spoke with a soft tenor, had the searching eyes of a 4-year-old who lost his father, someone ready to lend a hand, give away all his cash, even when it meant living in poverty. I wish I'd talked to him more, but I was young, ready to waste perfectly good moments, believing, like a pendulum, they'd return. Suspended in a pyramidal frame, the massive fist never sways, but it does set the mind in motion. Some say it looks cocked as an in-your-face jab, head-on like a truck rolling off the rouge. Others see it as protective, ready to defend the city that has taken its share of blows.
Mm. If you're just joining us, my guest is Diane DeSillis. Her latest poetry collection is When the Heart Needs a Stunt Double. That's a great poem.
Thank you.
May I ask, was that written on site?
It wasn't, but I had seen it driving home, and then I wrote it when I got home. Yeah, I was thinking about how it reminded me of those Newton balls that you pull and they click, click, click. And so it launched that way.
I read recently that it's so crazy. Some of your poems are going to the moon.
Yeah, that is crazy. I found that out just about less than a month ago.
Can you explain what's happening?
Yeah, there's this program called Writers on the Moon, and they have 125 slots. And I happen to be in an anthology that was written in English and translated into Persian, but they chose that as one of the books that are going to be launched in a capsule. It's going to land on the moon, and then it's going to remain there forever for people in the future to see what humanity was like in 2021. So I was just dumbfounded to find that out, but they are going up to the moon. I think it's launching the end of July. And there's a web page on Facebook called Writers on the Moon. And I also am redoing my website, which should be completed next week. So I've done a whole page explaining the process and how it's all going to happen.
I absolutely love the thought of Diane DeSillis poems being on the moon. How does this land with you?
You know, my husband took me to Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and I wasn't really that interested in going. I wanted to go to some museums, and he's saying, come on. So we go, and we're going through, we're looking at the control center, we're walking through. It's getting a little more interesting as we go along. Suddenly, they open these gigantic doors, and you see the Saturn V rocket ship. And April, literally, I just fell to my knees and wept instantly. It was so moving to me because the idea that someone had the faith that they could take this gigantic thing and launch it into space, I looked at my husband and I said, this is the opposite of the word no, the word yes. So when they called me, it just blew my mind. I can't even tell you how much it meant to me to have this happen.
Diane DeSillis' new collection of poetry is called When the Heart Needs a Stunt Double. Diane, it's great to hear from you. We hope you and your family are safe and well.
Thank you so much.